Today, the second Sunday of Lent, the custom has been, or the tradition of the church has been, that we hear the readings for the Transfiguration every second Sunday of Lent. So this year we hear from Matthew, being the year of Matthew, we hear his version. Matthew is the only gospel writer who refers to the Transfiguration as a vision. And when we hear the word vision, it takes us to all sorts of places in our own mind about, well, I mean, have I had visions maybe after that extra scotch or something? I don't know. But visions in our world are either taken with great cynicism, it seems to me, or negativity, and rarely treated with seriousness. But this event needs to be treated with seriousness because it's recorded by the gospel writers and in varying ways, but the essence of it is always the same. So when I look at such events or a word, for example, like transfiguration, I always kind of like to get there and play with it a little bit and see what's the meaning behind it. Transfiguration is not a word that anybody in this church would ever use, except when they hear these readings. You would not come home from work and your husband says, "How was your day at work today, dear?" And she goes, "Oh, it was great, I was transfigured." It doesn't happen that way, does it? So we look at the opposites. Now, if I looked at the opposite for the word transfigure, I kind of think the opposite is disfigure. I'll come back to that in a little while. There are some things that are not opposite, but there are some things that are the same. They run in parallel in Matthew's gospel. Matthew paints Jesus as the new Moses. So in the Transfiguration story, you're going to have a mountain, certainly. You're going to have a cloud. Same thing happened to Moses when he received the law of the Lord. You're going to have a conversation, a voice from God. Same thing happened to Moses, same thing happening here. And then you're going to have the descent, if you like. Moses coming down the mountain, then Jesus coming down the mountain. And then things start to roll on. So you've got those things in common. But in there exists also the opposites. Moses goes up the mountain on his own. Jesus takes Peter, James and John with him. Fast forward 3 weeks. Who's in the Garden of Gethsemane with Jesus? Peter, James and John. Again, there's all these little parallels that happen. They're there for a reason. And these are, in a sense, the opposites that we get when we look at Jesus as the new Moses. When Moses goes up the mountain, God's face is hidden. When Jesus goes up the mountain, the face of God is revealed to the witnesses, Peter, James and John. All alone with Moses, we have witnesses. And it's the first time we see the face of God in Jesus. Moses receives the law of the Lord, and his task is to get the people of Israel to live that law. Jesus receives a proclamation from God. "This is my son, the beloved. He enjoys my favour. Listen to him." The words are repeated from when Jesus was baptized. "This is my son, the beloved. My favour rests on him." So it's the second revealing, if you like, an epiphany in scriptural language, where Jesus is revealed. But today, unlike Moses, we have the face of God present in Jesus. It's the first time people could legitimately say, and in this case, Peter, James and John, and we are their descendants, people could legitimately say, "I have seen the face of God." So the people were asked to obey for Moses. With Jesus, they were asked to listen. Great thing in Lent. They were asked to listen. And then for Moses, his face shines, we're told, glows. With Jesus, the opposite happens. His whole body glows. That's where the transfiguration comes from. His whole body, and it's witnessed. So not just the face, the whole presence of Jesus. Moses descends from the mountain at Sinai and he starts to enforce the law. Jesus comes down from the mountain with Peter, James and John. And he dies in order that we might live. Once again, the opposites exist. He dies so that we can live. And they are witnesses to this. Peter, James and John are also the only ones present that are recorded at Jesus' death. So their role in the transfiguration vision and event is very important, because that's what we plug into, because as I said, we are their descendants in faith. Now let's go back to what I was talking about with the opposite of transfiguration. When we are making choices in life that are poor choices, bad choices, evil choices, when we do blatantly the wrong thing, we do that with a scour on our face, we drop the tone of our voice, our eyes become darkened, and we become shorter in temperament, and we usually become angry. And from that flows bad behaviour. It disfigures us as a person. Even our eyebrows join, if they're not already. But when we think about transfiguration, it's completely the opposite. Transfiguration is when we make good choices in our created selves, our good selves. We created good. And we make good choices that lead to peace, that lead to happiness, that lead to harmony. And it's expressed on our face. Our eyes are wider and open. They're much more peaceful. There's quite often a smile. There's none of the frown lines. And people want to be around us because, in a sense, we are transfigured. We are a new person. We're the same bag of bones and skin, but something in us makes us behave better. That's what the transfiguration in our lives is, and that's what we hone into in the second week of Lent. How can I make my life better? That I come down from the mountain with Jesus and I now exhibit in my life and my life choices the light of the world. I bring light because of my transfiguration, not disfiguration, my transfiguration. I bring light into people's lives, into their darkened lives. Our task, collectively and individually in Lent, is to say, how can I do that? How can I let the goodness that is in me, how can I let that come forward? And you'll have some successes and you'll have some failures. But that's what builds us up individually and as a community. And it's built up through our experience of forgiveness. None of this would have happened if Jesus had stayed on the mountain and Peter had built the three tents. None of that would have happened. The point was to come down and to start to see clearly, make good choices. And Lent is the time for us to make good choices, not poor choices. We have the capacity in us to do good or to do evil. We have the capacity in us to make someone's day, to bring peace and a bit of harmony and happiness in their day. Or we have the choice of completely ruining someone's day by saying something that is hurtful, by sending off that text message or that email that is hurtful and targeted and doesn't allow the recipient to even get a chance to respond. We can do that. My life can be cruising along pretty happy. Then all of a sudden, I'll open an email from some angry person and my whole day changes, my demeanour changes. I go from being transfigured to disfigured because of the bad choice that somebody else has made. That capacity is in with each and every one of us. Don't do it. Behave like people of the light, like people who have been transfigured, people who want to bring peace and harmony into a darkened world at times. Behave in a noble way that inspires people, not makes people perspire. That's what Lent, I really think, is about. And I think that's probably why the church uses the transfiguration in the second week of Lent. It is a reminder that we have been transfigured from our baptism into the daily choices and by the daily choices that we make. I encourage you, make good choices, especially in Lent. To that end, I'll just let you know that I have done a stock take of every toilet roll in this parish. I will do the same after you all leave this morning. That's a poor choice. I do not understand for the life of me. I could get it if it was a gastrovirus. But a runny nose virus is well beyond my understanding. Let's make good choices.